the headlines this hour. Israeli forces launch a deadly raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank, killing 9 Palestinians and injuring over a dozen others. Ukraine's president urges the West to send long-range missiles and fighter jets to his country, hours after Germany and the U.S. announced combat tank deliveries to Kiev. And Australians, including Aboriginals, hold rallies to mark Invasion Day, that they say is the beginning of colonial oppression and genocide. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. There appears to be no end in sight to the deadly crimes of Israel against Palestinians. The regime forces have killed 9 more Palestinians, making it the deadliest day so far this year in the occupied West Bank. The young man identified as Ez Salahat is among those fatally shot during an Israeli raid in the Jenin refugee camp. Over a dozen Palestinians were also injured. Israeli troops have barred medical teams from reaching the area. Regime forces also stormed the hospital in Jenin and intentionally fired tear gas toward its pediatric department. Separately, Israeli forces demolished a sports club in the refugee camp. Meanwhile, Palestinians have held the funeral of those recently killed by the Israeli regime troops. The recent raid on the Jenin refugee camp comes a day after Israeli forces shot dead 2 Palestinians in separate attacks in the occupied West Bank. 29 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied territory since the beginning of 2023. Earlier, correspondent from Ramallah, Monica Ndil, walked us through the latest developments in the occupied West Bank, where a general strike has been declared following Israel's deadly raid.
The Israeli forces pulled out from the Jenin area. A general strike had been declared in Jenin and in other cities in the occupied West Bank, including the cities and areas around Jenin like Nablus and Tul Karim. Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas and Jihad movement, condemned this operation and said nothing would terrify the Palestinians and bring them to their knees. They would continue the resistance and that Palestinian fighters would continue to fight the Israeli forces with every possible means.
The Israeli regime's latest deadly raid on the Jenin refugee camp has drawn condemnations from the Palestinian Authority and resistance groups. The Palestinian presidency calls the aggression an organized crime and massacre, urging the international community to interfere and stop the Israeli mayhem. Palestinian resistance groups Hamas and the Islamic Jihad have also condemned the attack, with the Islamic Jihad expressing its readiness to fight back if the raid continued. A general strike has been announced across the occupied West Bank in protest at Israel's latest crime. Meanwhile, Israel has put its troops on alert along the besieged Gaza Strip for a possible Palestinian response. Earlier, Palestinian activist and journalist Wafa al-Udaini joined us to give her assessment on why the Israeli regime has become more aggressive lately.
Jenin is among the areas of the northern occupied West Bank where the Israeli occupation has intensified raids over the past year in an attempt to crack down on growing armed Palestinian resistance. And actually feel this time that the occupation army are more arrogant and they feel that they have the upper hand and they feel that they are protected by the new Israeli fascist and terror government and under the name of the normalization by the Arab countries. Actually, this thing strengthened them more and more. So they violate the international law and they act, as if there is no one above them. They have everyone is beside them. So they, they mean to eliminate the resistance in the West Bank, in the occupied West Bank, to pave the way to construct more Israeli settlements in the West Bank, in which we all know that these settlements are internationally illegal.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran in those European countries that claim to advocate human rights and freedom. Addressing a conference in Tehran, Raisi said the act of sacrilege was an insult to the entire Abrahamic religions. He said similar cases where desecration is done in the name of freedom of expression are the, quote, worst type of insult to humanity. The Iranian president said disrespecting the Quran or any divine religion is a, quote, abhorrent act. This against the backdrop of burning and tearing apart of copies of the Holy Quran by two far-right politicians in Stockholm and The Hague. The sacrilegious acts have angered Muslims around the world. The U.S. House of Representatives has overwhelmingly approved the resolution in support of recent riots and vandalism in Iran. The measure, which was approved by 420-1 vote, applauds what it calls the courage and resolve of protesters in more than 13 Iranian cities. Both Democratic and Republican lawmakers have praised the resolution, commending the protesters who went on rampaging in Iranian cities. It's the latest in a series of anti-Iran measures by the U.S. and its European allies. Just days ago, Washington, Brussels, and London imposed fresh sanctions targeting Iranian officials and entities over the country's response to the riots. In a tit-for-tat move, Iran slapped sanctions on individuals and entities from the EU and the UK. The Iranian Foreign Ministry accused the targeted individuals and entities of supporting terrorist groups, fomenting violence and unrest in Iran, and spreading disinformation. Tensions between Tehran and Brussels have grown further since the European Parliament passed a non-binding resolution that calls for blacklisting of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Political analyst Mohammad Marandi gives us his perspective on the latest U.S. measures against Iran.
For Iranians, it doesn't mean anything because, after all, it's a resolution and nothing more. But even if sanctions were imposed, it still wouldn't mean anything because the United States and the Europeans have been imposing maximum pressure sanctions since Trump left the nuclear deal. There's nothing more for the Americans or the Europeans to do. They can confiscate the assets of Iranian officials in Europe, but there are no assets there for them to take. So what effect or what impact does it have on Iran? All that it does is that it creates greater suspicion in Iran towards Western countries, and it impedes any progress towards a signing of the restart of the JCPOA, something which the Europeans and the Americans need, and they know that they need because they say that repeatedly in their conversations with Iranians, the Europeans directly, and the Americans indirectly. The behavior of the Europeans in particular is becoming very much like Bush after 9/11. Very irrational, very angry, very emotional, and the attitude of you're either with us or against us is something that they have basically been pursuing or they've been abiding by.
Germany and the U.S. have finally announced that they would send their advanced battle tanks to Kiev and a new surge of Western military support for Ukraine in its fight with Russia.
We will also provide Ukraine with Leopard 2 main battle tanks. This is the result of intensive consultation once again with our allies and international partners.
Today, I'm announcing that the United States will be sending 31 Abram tanks to Ukraine, the equivalent of one Ukrainian battalion. Secretary Austin has recommended this step because it will enhance the Ukraine's capacity to defend its territory and achieve its strategic objectives.
Biden added that ramping up Western armament to Ukraine is to defend the country, but poses no offensive threat to Russia. The decisions by Washington and Berlin also paved the way for other European countries to reach out to Kiev with military help. Germany has been hesitant to provide its Leopard tanks to Kiev, but said that it would move forward only if the U.S. sent its own Abrams tanks. The Ukrainian president hailed the announcement, but urged his Western allies to supply fighter jets and long-range missiles in addition to tanks. Volodymyr Zelensky further called for a speedy delivery of the pledged weapons. Meantime, Moscow has called the decision, quote, another blatant provocation. Russia says the move is extremely dangerous, underlining that the new shipments will escalate the conflict. National Day of the Day of Invasion. Australians have held rallies across the country to oppose national celebrations on January the 26th, the day which they say are disrespectful to the indigenous population. The following report brings you the details.
No crying genocide! No crying genocide! No crying genocide! No crying genocide! Celebrating January 26th, best known as Australia Day, has become increasingly controversial in recent years, with people holding rallies on this day to highlight the historical plight of Aboriginals. Many Indigenous Australians who traced their lineage on the continent back 50,000 years regard it as Invasion Day. Tens of thousands of protesters lined up in Sydney, while thousands more gathered in Melbourne, Canberra and other cities, saying the day marks the beginning of colonial oppression and genocide.
Nobody's got the right to celebrate genocide. That's it. This is ground zero, genocide. Ground zero happened here on 26th of January, 1788. Nobody should be celebrating. It's not an event to celebrate.
The government has designated January 26th as National Day, which marks the anniversary of the 1788 arrival of the first fleet of British ships in Port Jackson. But protesters believe the government is still trying to gloss over the scale of British colonizers' crimes against Native Australians.
I think most white Australians would not celebrate this day at all if they knew exactly that level of depression and deep sadness.
There are several accounts of how colonizers wiped out Indigenous communities in Australia through brutal and heart-wrenching repression. Emily Caroline Cray, a young settler traveling through northwest Queensland in 1883, recounts some of the British colonizers' horrendous crimes in her personal diary.
The station owner has 40 pairs of blacks' ears nailed around the walls collected during raiding parties after the loss of many cattle speared by the blacks.
Aboriginal people remain the most disadvantaged Australians, with higher rates of poverty, health issues and imprisonment than any other community. Now more than 2.5 centuries later, they're still struggling to find their feet in a white-dominated society. Australia's Prime Minister is planning to hold a referendum in March on recognizing around 4% Indigenous people in the Constitution. But repeated calls to abolish the controversial National Day have fell on deaf ear, as the government remains adamant to celebrate what many call the anniversary of Australia's colonization.
France has summoned its envoy to Burkina Faso one day after announcing that it would withdraw troops from the African country. The French Foreign Ministry says the envoy has been recalled for consultations on the state and perspectives of bilateral relations with the capital. Earlier this week, military rulers of Burkina Faso denounced an accord allowing the presence of French armed forces since 2018 and called on French forces to leave. On Friday, people also took to the streets of the capital to demand the French ambassador leave the country. Burkina Faso's former colonizer maintains some 400 special forces there under the pretext of protecting civilians from militants. People, however, believe that France has failed to properly tackle armed groups and its military presence has deteriorated the security situation in the country. Moving on to Peru, where a group of Peruvian lawmakers have submitted a motion to Congress to impeach President Dina Boluarte. Sources say the motion, titled Permanent Moral Incapacity, has been signed by 20 congressmen, but it needs the backing of at least 52 lawmakers to be debated in Congress. The unrest has gripped the South American country since the ouster and the arrest of former President Pedro Castillo last month. More than 50 people have been killed in violent protests since then. Protesters are demanding the resignation of Boluarte, who assumed office following the removal of Castillo. She has apologized for the killings, but rules out stepping down. The country, meanwhile, is struggling with shortages of basic products, as roadblocks set up by protesters have hindered freight deliveries. Former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, is another high-ranking U.S. politician embroiled in controversy. Classified documents have been held at his residence since he left office in 2021. His representative turned the classified records over to the FBI last week. It is not clear what information the documents contain. Last year, the FBI stormed former President Donald Trump's house in Florida in search of classified documents that he was keeping, despite repeated calls by the National Archives to turn them over.
Former Vice President Mike Pence is the latest high-ranking politician to be put into the spotlight for the discovery of the documents marked as classified at his Indiana residence. Pence's representative turned the classified records over to the FBI last week. The representative said a, quote, small number of records were accidentally boxed and transported to his home as he left office in 2021. It is not clear what information the documents contain. According to U.S. media, the documents are believed to have first been taken to Pence's home in Virginia before later being sent to Indiana. The FBI and the Justice Department's National Security Division have launched a review of the documents and how they ended up in Pence's house in Indiana. The announcement is contrary to Pence's repeated statements that he did not have classified materials in his possession upon leaving office.
Our staff reviewed all of the materials in our office and in our residence to ensure that there were no classified materials that left the White House or remained in our possession. And I remain confident that that was done in a thorough and careful way.
The discovery of the classified documents in Pence's residence marks the third time in recent history in which a president or vice president has inappropriately possessed classified material after leaving office. U.S. investigators are already investigating ex-President Donald Trump's possession of such files. Roughly 300 records with classification markings were recovered from Mar-a-Lago, a private club. Trump and his lawyers resisted handing over the documents until the FBI raided the Florida holiday home last August. The search of Trump's property was the culmination of months of bickering between the government and Trump's representatives, who resisted efforts to return the missing documents.
This discovery comes in the wake of similar revelations about classified material discovered in President Joe Biden's private office. His attorneys discovered fewer than a dozen classified records in a locked closet at the Penn Biden Center. That's a think tank based at the University of Pennsylvania. Several classified documents were also discovered during a search of his Delaware home this week. Revelations put Biden in a difficult position. He's under pressure and faces calls for a congressional investigation as he prepares for a likely rerun for presidency. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Since the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, billions of dollars of military equipment and weapons have been poured into Ukraine by the West, especially the United States of America. Also, with prolongation of the war in Ukraine and the continuous aid of West to Kiev, Russia has repeatedly called the actions of Western countries criminal and the beginning of the Third World War. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has covered this story and tells us more. The United States has decided to take the Ukraine war to the next level by sending Kiev its much-sought Abrams tanks, despite Russia's warnings. Unnamed officials said on Tuesday, 24th of January, the U.S. is moving towards sending Abrams tanks to Ukraine. In a reversal from its previous policies, the United States appears to be dropping its opposition to sending M1 Abrams battle tanks to Ukraine. An announcement could be made over the next few days. Till now, Washington has said providing Ukraine with Abrams tanks is not feasible due to its difficult training and maintenance. Following the Ukraine Defense Contact Group in Ramstein, Germany, on Friday, 20th of January, Ukraine on Saturday, 21st of January, denounced the global indecision displayed by its allies in providing Kiev with advanced battle tanks, claiming, "Today's indecision is killing more of our people." Germany in particular faced a huge backlash from its NATO allies over its refusal to agree to send German-made Leopard tanks to Ukraine, amid unprecedented pressure mounting on Germany to do more to help Kiev. Western military leaders gathered in Ramstein Air Base in Germany to provide Kiev with billions of dollars worth of fresh military hardware. The new aid package includes armored vehicles and munitions for the Ukrainian forces who are fighting Russian troops. U.S.-made Bradley fighting vehicles, Stryker armored personnel carriers, mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles, and high-mobility multipurpose wheeled vehicles, alongside tens of billions of dollars worth of armored vehicles made by other allies in addition to various military hardware, have been sent already to Ukraine since Russia launched its special operation in February of last year. Moscow has repeatedly warned Western countries against the futile attempt to stop Russia from reaching its objectives in pro-Russian regions of Ukraine. Moscow has warned the West flooding of weaponry to Kiev only prolongs the war and will add to the casualties. The English website of Al Jazeera channel has also covered this story and tells us more. Former Russian president and deputy chairman of the country's Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, had said Russia was forced to launch its special operation in Ukraine to defend itself against the enemy's preparation of aggression. Dmitry Medvedev said on Monday, 23rd of January, "The special operation launched by Russia in Ukraine almost a year ago was Moscow's last resort response to preparations for aggression by the United States and its satellites." Medvedev said the world came really close to the threat of World War III as a result of the US-led NATO's expansionist policies in Eastern Europe. Dmitry Medvedev, who was addressing the leadership of the ruling United Russia Party in Moscow, explained to the audience, he said, "It is obvious that the world came close to the Third World War because of what was happening." Medvedev said at the meeting of the Bureau of the Supreme Party Council, The task of our diplomacy is to prevent the cynical line of the Western countries, adding that Moscow's trustworthy partners are countries with significant global economic and political power. Prior to this, Medvedev had warned that the continuous request by Ukraine for the West to deliver bigger and bigger shipments of their most advanced military equipment to Kiev in order to defeat the Russian side could provoke the outbreak of a nuclear war. Medvedev went on to describe a serious crisis at the United Nations and other international institutions. He said, "The United Nations was created to resolve international disputes, however, it has been turned into a battlefield for the West." Medvedev said, "Our opponents are trying to enlist as many votes as possible in support of their anti-Russia initiatives, using underhanded means such as economic pressure, extortion, and political bribery." He added, "The main mission of Russian diplomacy remains to counter this cynical line by the West." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. A senior Russian official has warned that deliveries of offensive weapons to Ukraine by the United States and NATO for attack on Russia would lead to a global catastrophe. Vyacheslav Volodin, the chairman of the lower house of the Russian parliament, made the remark in a post on his Telegram channel on Sunday, 22nd of January, after Ukraine's allies recently promised Kiev a new military aid package worth billions of dollars. Vyacheslav Volodin said supplies of offensive weapons to Kiev would lead to a global disaster if Washington and NATO supply weapons that will be used to strike civilian cities, civilians in Russia and Russian cities and attempt to seize our territories. As they threaten, this will lead to retaliatory measures using more powerful weapons. He said arguments that nuclear powers have not previously used weapons of mass destruction in local conflicts are untenable, stressing that those states did not face a situation where the security of their citizens or their territorial integrity was at stake. The senior Russian lawmaker, Vyacheslav Volodin, called on members of US Congress, members of Germany's Bundestag, France's Parliament, or France's National Assembly, and other European parliamentarians to realize that their responsibility to humankind, warning that they are pushing the world to a disastrous war by their decisions. Russia's Itatas news agency has also covered the same story. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says the war in Ukraine is no longer a hybrid one, as it has almost escalated into a real one, with the West continuing to plot against Moscow. Sergei Lavrov said on Monday, 23rd of January, "When we speak about what is happening in Ukraine, it is a war, not a hybrid one, almost a real one, that the West has been plotting for a long time against Russia." Speaking at a press conference during a visit to South Africa, Sergei Lavrov said, "The goal is to destroy everything Russian, from language to culture. That has been in Ukraine for centuries, and to prohibit people from speaking their mother tongue." Sergei Lavrov said, "Any cultural contacts related to the Russian language are prohibited in Ukraine, and this is all supported by the West." The top diplomat made the remarks as European governments, including Poland, pushed Germany to give permission for supplying Kiev with German-made Leopard tanks. Sergei Lavrov also said Moscow was willing to negotiate with Kiev in the early months of the war, but that the United States and its Western allies advised the Ukrainian government against any negotiations with Moscow. Lavrov said by the end of March of 2022, delegations from both sides agreed on the principle to settle this conflict. He added, "It is well known and was published openly that our American, British and some European colleagues told Ukraine that it is too early to deal with Moscow and the arrangement, which was almost agreed, was never revisited by the Kiev regime. However, the West claimed Russia was not serious about peace negotiations.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakati.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet, the Messenger of Allah. He was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, with his talents, his genius, and his great endless scientific ability, has proven the luminous reality adopted by the Shia that an imam must be the most aware and virtuous one of the people of his time. And it has also proven that the one who has more knowledge than anyone else must be the imam, regardless of whether he is young or old. Allah the Almighty has provided the infallible imams of the Ahlul Bayt, peace and blessings upon them all, with knowledge, wisdom, and sound judgment, similar to how Allah provided the prophets of the past with these same concepts and qualities. Truly, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam has shown this reality to all of the world.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are humbled and honored to be talking about the dialogues and these divine conversations of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, the ninth divinely appointed imam. A beautiful imam, a very honorable imam, a very knowledgeable imam, a very wise imam. An imam who was surely connected to the Almighty Allah and the Holy Quran and the teachings of his forefathers, who in return were connected to the teachings of the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. In one of these conversations, we find that a man came and asked Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, what are some of the results and the consequences and the effects of greediness? Now, of course, greediness being one of the moral and ethical attributes which are very much prohibited and reprimanded in Islam. The holy religion of Islam always tells us to not have greediness and to not be greedy, not only for things to acquire for ourselves, but also to not be greedy with that which others have. So sometimes an individual will be greedy in trying to increase their wealth or increase their own power or increase their status, for example. And so in this manner, that greediness pushes you to, you know, maybe work harder and go out of your way, etc. But the motivator and the fundamental driver and catalyst is not something positive. It is something negative. It is greed. And so we have to be very careful and kind of retrospect and really pay attention to what exactly it is that is motivating us for doing whatever we are doing, and to make sure that it is not greediness. But another face of greediness is when you covet what others have. Now, there's a very thin line between this kind of greediness and jealousy, for example. But it is said that jealousy is primarily when you see what somebody else has and you kind of complain that why do you not have it, and two, why do they have it? And the ultimate form, of course, is how you wish that they didn't have it as well. So that's jealousy in a nutshell, pretty much. Of course, a very vast topic in itself. But greediness is what we were saying. And so here, Imam Al-Jawad, alayhi salam, talking about the effects of greediness, says to this man, he says that nothing degrades significance like greediness does. Now here, when he is talking about significance, he's talking about the value, the significance, the honor, and the dignity of a human being. So he says, what is one of those things that to a great, great extent degrades this significance, this dignity, this honor of a man? Of course, he says, it is greediness. And so, of course, we find that greediness not only degrades the dignity and honor of a human being, but it takes them towards the dark abysses of ignorance and in the darkness of life. Of course, a person who is greedy will never be happy with themselves. They will never be happy with the situation that they are in. And the materialistic world, dear friends, is like sea water. It is like salt water. The more you drink, the thirstier you get. And then the more you drink again, the more thirsty you get. And then eventually you go mad. This is what greed to the materialistic world does. And in general, this is what greed does. It is an insatiable hunger that the more you feed it, the more insatiable it becomes, until eventually, God forbid, it drives a person mad. So remember that nothing degrades the honor and significance and dignity of a human being like greediness does. May Allah protect every single one of us from this unethical and immoral quality. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Jawad, alayhi salam.
Parts of Ziyarat Text of Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam.
As-salamu alayka ayyuha an-nur as-sati. As-salamu alayka ayyuha al-badr al-talim.
Peace be upon you, O shining light. Peace be upon you, O rising full moon. Peace be upon you, O pure one from among the pure ones. Peace be upon you, O immaculate from among the immaculate ones. Peace be upon you, O pleased and pure. Peace be upon you, O Aba Jafar, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious, the faithful leader, and Allah's mercy and blessings be upon you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir
/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Teachers, railway workers, and public sector employees abandoned their posts recently to protest a planned increase in the retirement age. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted train services, schools, flights, and scores of businesses in France were disrupted on Thursday, January 19th, as labor unions organized mass protest against President Emmanuel Macron's plans to raise the retirement age to 64, a move bitterly opposed by the French public. The largest marches took place in Paris, where the CGT trade union estimated that 400,000 people took to the streets. The union claimed that 2 million protesters marched nationwide, although France's Interior Ministry put the turnout at 1.2 million nationwide and 80,000 in Paris. Amid the demonstrations, police officers clashed with black-clad anarchists who regularly show up at protests in France to spar with police. Video footage showed armored officers using tear gas and batons on the black-clad bloc and other nearby protesters. Similar demonstrations were held in the cities of Nantes, Lyon, Bordeaux, Marseille, and Toulouse, and in more than 200 other locations across France. France's 8 largest trade unions participated, meaning that schools, railways, airports, power plants, and other vital utilities were operating at a drastically reduced capacity. As few as 1 in 5 high-speed TGV train lines were running, the rail operator, SNCF, said, while Eurostar said that several connections with the UK were cancelled. More than 40% of primary school teachers didn't show up for work, CNN reported, citing the French Education Ministry. Macron's government is urging Parliament to pass a bill that would raise the retirement age for most French workers from 62 to 64, a result that would still see these workers getting their pensions 3 years earlier than most of their European counterparts. While the French government insists that this reform is necessary to stop the country's pension system from sliding into deficit, the unions argue that the system should instead be buoyed by increasing taxes on the wealthy rather than by squeezing more productivity out of aging workers. CGT leader Philippe Martinez told France 24 recently, "It's rare for French unions to all agree on something, so it demonstrates the seriousness of the issue." Macron, who already tried and failed to hike the retirement age in 2019, told reporters that the reform is just and responsible. The public, however, disagrees. A poll taken recently found that 68% of French people are hostile to this pension reform, although only 51% support the union's campaign of protests and strikes. Euronews also wrote in this regard, workers in many French cities took to the streets on Thursday, January 19th, to reject proposed pension changes that would push back the retirement age. Demonstrations gathered thousands of people in the cities of Paris, Marseille, Toulouse, Nantes, Lyon, and more. The strikes have severely disrupted transport, schools, and other public services across France. Under the plans, French workers will have to work longer before receiving a pension under the new rules, with the nominal retirement age rising from 62 to 64. In a country with an aging population and growing life expectancy where everyone receives a state pension, Macron's government says the reform is the only way to keep the system solvent. According to Euronews, unions argue the pension overhaul threatens hard-fought rights and propose a tax on the wealthy or more payroll contributions from employers to finance the pension system. Polls suggest most French people also oppose the reform. More than 200 rallies are expected around France, including a large one in Paris involving all of France's major unions. Laurent Berger, head of the CFDT union, called the government's plans an unfair reform that BFMTV and called on workers to peacefully come to the streets to say they disagree. Police unions opposed to the retirement reform are also taking part in the demonstrations, while those who are on duty are bracing for potential violence if extremist groups join the demonstrations. A majority of trains around France are cancelled, including some international connections, according to the country's rail authority, SNCF.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. This hadith is about the signs of the reappearance of Imam Al-Mahdi alayhi salam. As you know, there's many signs for the reappearance of the Imam. These have been mentioned in the hadith. This is a subject that should be investigated meticulously in its own proper place. These hadiths, their chains of transmission, they should be assessed, and they should be measured with the criteria which have been mentioned for reliable hadiths in the books of science of hadiths. Right now, we don't have, time to directly get into that. But a lot of these signs have been mentioned in very reliable hadiths. One of these hadiths which we would like to recite for you today is a hadith which has been transmitted from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. The Imam said, certainly there are signs prior to the uprising of Al-Qa'im from the Almighty Allah for the believers. I, meaning the transmitter of the hadith, whose name was Muhammad ibn Muslim, a very famous companion of some of our a'imma alayhi salam, he said, I asked, and what are they? May Allah make me your ransom. He replied, that is his verse. So the Imam, alayhi salam, he references a Quranic verse regarding these signs. The verse in question is the following. He said, Allah says in this verse, we will surely test you, meaning the believers, before the reappearance of Al-Qa'im, with a measure of fear and hunger. Mishayim min al-khawf wal-ju wa naqsim min al-amwal wal-anfus. This is a very famous verse of the Holy Quran. We will surely test you, meaning the believers, before the reappearance of the Al-Qa'im, with a measure of fear. So there will be, I guess, a lack of security in the world. People will be afraid. You know, this is something that we tangibly see today, right? There's no security in the world. And you go out, to buy a carton of milk, and you're not really sure if you're going to come back or not. With the ease at which people can buy, handguns and guns and these kind of things, right? This is something that we tangibly see today. With a measure of fear and hunger, meaning produce, there will be a deficiency of food. Again, something that we see today, and a loss of wealth. You know, people. Their lives will be very deficient. Lives and fruit, death and destruction and produce, these are all signs of the Imam's appearance. And in the end, God says, and give good news to the patient, وَبَشِّرِ الصَّابِرِينَ, meaning throughout these trials and tribulations that people will go through, those people who are patient and bear these trials with patience, they will be the ones who will be given good news and, be relieved by the advent of the Imam alayhi salam. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the signs of the reappearance of the Mahdi alayhi salam in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Another mass shooting in the U.S. 10 people have been killed in L.A. near a Chinese lunar celebration event. What has become a staple of life in America, it appears. And the question still remains, why does America tolerate mass shootings that are taking place due to firearm possessions? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at this recurring crisis there and what role the gun lobby, the NRA, has, along with why U.S.